How long has it been since you last shared a holiday meal around a big table with extended friends and family? It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn, and for Kate Archer Kent, my last Thanksgiving dinner was just my immediate family in the garage with the garage door open. What's it going to be like when we break bread once again with a larger family circle, including those we disagree with? And what do you think are the best ways to keep from becoming disagreeable? Are you going to be at an in-person Thanksgiving this year? 1-800-642-1234 or email us ideas at WPR.org. We thought we'd ask the experts about how to best wade through these holiday meals and the extended family that perhaps we have not seen for more than a year plus. Dr. Karen Tamarius is the founder of Smart Politics, a progressive organization aiming to help people who disagree communicate effectively. Karen, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much. Happy to be here.
And also joining us this morning, Carolyn Lukensmeyer. She's the founding director of the National Institute for Civil Discourse. It's an organization that works to reduce political dysfunction and incivility. Carolyn, welcome back to the show.
Thanks very much. Delighted to be here.
Karen, I will start with you and just ask, when I am about ready to approach somebody that I know I disagree with, I have seen them on social media, I am certain where they stand, and I am all equally certain I do not stand with them, but I do have to sit with them at the dinner table. How do I even begin my approach? Karen?
Is that Karen or Carolyn?
Sorry. Let's start with Karen this morning.
Okay, thank you so much. The first thing to do when you're starting a conversation and you're really worried about what they're going to say is to do it in a very non-judgmental and kind of open-ended way. So introduce a topic that you're interested in discussing and broach it with a wide open question that shows that you're curious about hearing their perspective rather than offering your own.
And so, Carolyn, with Thanksgiving and other holidays now approaching, families may be debating between having a gathering at all if some folks might not be vaccinated or others don't feel safe. How do you begin to set hard boundaries with big holidays like these?
Well, Lee, this is a challenge for literally millions of families across the country, making the decision, is everyone going to be invited or are people who are not vaccinated not welcome? So you have to begin with the family having really open discussions prior to the holiday about what the ground rules are. And then once you've made that decision, if in fact you think there's still big differences of opinion about vaccination that may come up at the table, what's most important is for everyone, and it's similar to what Karen said, approach this with the intention of learning why people feel the way they feel about being vaccinated, where they're getting their information, and how they made their decision. Always avoiding starting out with the judgment of you should be vaccinated or you shouldn't be vaccinated.
And Carolyn, I mean, as the founding director of the National Institute for Civil Discourse, give us an example or some examples of what you've heard transpiring over the holiday table. Some of the political fights that you've been privy to.
Well, that's a great question, Lee, because actually at the Institute, after the 2016 presidential campaign, we began to get thousands of inquiries about what to do about that Thanksgiving holiday. Mm. The issue that year was, who did you vote for, Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump? So this issue of very strong boundaries of disagreement and judgment, whether it's about who you voted for, whether it's about you wear a mask, whether it's about the vaccine, this has now been with us for 5 years. And particularly this year, with the gap created because of COVID, families want to be together. And we get a huge number of inquiries about how can we be together that recognizes the importance of our relationships, but also allows us to keep the conversation civil when we profoundly disagree.
That's Carolyn Lukensmeyer, founding director of the National Institute for Civil Discourse, also joining us this morning to help us wade through our holiday meal and extended family. Karen Tamarius, the founder of Smart Politics. And Karen, I'll ask you, what are some concrete actions that we can do to have a productive conversation over the holiday dinner table?
There are a number of things, and it actually starts with what you don't do, and often getting rid of the things that the mistakes that we are inclined to make can go a long way toward improving the interaction. So the kind of the three big things I find get in people's way are telling other people what to think, like just coming in and saying, this is how it is. Anybody who knows anything knows that this is the way to see the world. The other thing is making people feel bad about themselves. So implying that if you disagree with me, you are somehow a bad person. And then the other thing, and this one shocks a lot of people, is actually getting into it and arguing with facts and reason, trying to make some kind of case for why you are right and they are wrong. In general, all three of those approaches tend to backfire and send conversations off the track. What we really need to do in a dialogue is focus on building the relationship. And the more you can build the relationship between you and the other person, the easier it will be to talk about the areas that you disagree.
Well, let me ask you this, because sometimes the holiday conversation can move to the inane. We can talk about football ad nauseum or just go on and on about the weather all day. But those seem to, while they may be small talk and may not be the big issues of the day, those may go to the heart of what you're referring to, Karen, and that is building the relationship and doing so on things that may we can all agree on. It's cold outside and the Packers are good.
Yeah, one of the things we lose sight of when we start thinking about political differences in particular is how much we have in common. And if we can remind ourselves of what we like about each other and respect about each other before venturing into those areas of disagreement, that can kind of build a bridge that will support us in those areas of disagreement in the conversation. So what I really emphasize is that going into these conversations, you first build a support of comfort, which is making people feel safe enough to, express themselves authentically, build connection, which means establishing trust. And that means really, I am going to care about you and love you no matter what your views are, and comprehension. So showing them that you really get where they're coming from and that you're trying to see the world through their eyes before expressing your own differences of opinion.
So to recap here, the do's would be broad strokes, build the relationship. The don'ts would be one, don't tell them what to think, don't make them feel bad, and don't argue.
Yeah, you got it.
Sounds good. Carolyn, would I actually be able to change somebody's mind over a holiday dinner table? Can you actually move somebody's opinion?
That's a great question. What you can do is create the safe space that Karen referred to, get people to talk about their personal stories related to the vaccine rather than their opinions. And what they will quickly begin to discover is that they probably have more in common than they have that divides them. So I think changing an opinion, particularly when it's a dug-in position like people are now in the vaccine, is not the target. But the target is discovering that we care more about the relationship and that we have more in common than we thought. And that most interesting on the vaccine question is most people had some ambivalence along the way, whichever decision they made. So creating the space for people to talk about the ways they felt conflicted creates that space of connection. So we both have an immune system vulnerability. I decided to get vaccinated, you decided not to. As we're telling our stories, we find more places to join emotionally in terms of what a tough decision this really is for many, many people.
very much changing my perspective. I go in with thinking about all the news of the day to a holiday meal, which really doesn't need all the news of the day. It just needs those connections with the ones around you who perhaps you have not seen for far too long. And those connections could be as simple as the chilly weather outside or the Green Bay Packers on the field, although they will not be playing for Turkey Day tomorrow. So will you be at a get-together with those who may not be vaccinated? And is that weighing on you this turkey season? Do you think you'll have a contentious Thanksgiving dinner this year? And if not, how do you do it? 1-800-642-1234. A conversation continues with Carolyn Lukensmeyer, founding director of the National Institute for Civil Discourse, and Karen Tamarius, founder of Smart Politics. I'm Lee Rayburn. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. So the don'ts over the holiday meal. Don't tell others what to think. Don't make them feel bad and don't argue with them. Seems pretty simple, broad strokes. But what about another don't? Like, don't just keep quiet through Thanksgiving dinner and concentrate on not rolling your eyes? It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn, and we're getting best practices for persevering through the holidays this year. And our guests are here to help us express ourselves and our point of view without having to make an argument. Now, how do you do that? 1-800-642-1234 is the number to join us. Ideas@WPR.org is the email. Karen Tamarius is the founder of Smart Politics. Carolyn Lukensmeyer is the founding director of the National Institute for Civil Discourse, here to take your calls until 7:30. And Carolyn, you mentioned before about the work that your organization did after the 2016 election to bring families back together. How do you see this Thanksgiving different from those in years past?
Each year, these divisions have become more personal. Whether or not I get vaccinated has directly an impact on my health and potentially even my life. Whereas in 2016, when we were talking about who we vote for, although people are intensely identified with that decision, it is not a matter of life and death. So I think the intensity and difficulty of respecting each other's decisions have really deepened over this period of time. And Lee, one thing we haven't talked about yet that's really important in this process is learning to ask questions, particularly when you are triggered by something the other person has said, rather than stopping them or trying to give them different information. Ask another question. On the vaccine issue, we've found the question, what do you wish people understood about your decision? Often opens up more space for an authentic conversation. Or what in your decision most reflects deep values that you hold about how you want to live your life? So you can see how that kind of question takes the conversation to a very different level.
And Karen Tamarius from Smart Politics, one of the things that we do have to seem to have in common from going back to the issues over the holiday table and in the after the 2016 election is that we seem to be operating under different data sets, that our opinions are coming from two different points of not view, but two different fact sets. So how do you begin to overcome the fact that we have actually divided up where our facts are between each other?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. There are some very strong factual differences out there. But one of the things I think people misread about political conversations is there's this belief out there that you need to agree on the facts in order to have a meaningful and productive conversation. And that actually is a myth. You can have a great conversation and still have significant factual differences. And this is kind of one of the things that I think my psychiatry training helps me out with a lot. As a practicing psychiatrist, I often dealt with patients who were delusional. They simply were out of touch with reality, sometimes in very large ways, sometimes in small ways. And it was understood through my training that when you encounter a patient like that, you don't fixate on trying to disabuse them of these facts that are untrue. And instead, you focus on the parts of reality that they are getting right. And that's what you talk about. And so that's exactly what we need to do in political conversations as well. If there's a significant factual dispute, don't focus on that area. Focus on the things that you can agree on and develop that. And often that actually provides a certain incentive. So let's say you're talking with someone who is bought into a conspiracy theory. If you spend all your time trying to convince them the conspiracy theory is false, you're actually kind of rewarding them for engaging in that kind of thinking. And you're developing those neural networks, making them stronger.
But so how would I go about is with somebody with an unfounded conspiracy theory at my holiday table? I'd be interested in knowing how I'd go about finding any common ground with them.
Right. Well, instead, you look to a larger picture. So if, for example, a common conspiracy theory right now is the QAnon conspiracy theory. And if I was at the family dinner and someone was talking about QAnon, I probably would make a statement such as, wow, it sounds like you have a lot of concerns about whether our political representatives are actually representing us or whether they are being controlled by other interests. And so that kind of concern about whether you're really being represented by your government is a very legitimate concern, something that we can all connect with at a factual level. It is reality based. And then you don't have to engage with all of the strangeness and minutiae and delusional content of the QAnon conspiracy.
Dr. Tamarius, I appreciate that. Karen Tamarius from Smart Politics also joining us this morning. Carolyn Lukensmeyer from the National Institute for Civil Discourse, and you as well at 1-800-642-1234. How do you deal with family members who disagree with you? And have you ever had a major dust up during the holidays, and how did you find resolution there? I'd be interested in knowing. 1-800-642-1234. Mike from Spooner called, couldn't stay with us, but he says his family is very liberal. He's conservative. Mike's family tries to engage with him during the dinner table, but he does not engage. He says, typically says something like, well, this is how you want it, and tries to move on. But Mike said it's gotten worse in the last year, and the conversation always seems to be steered back towards politics. Carolyn, so what's Mike to do when the conversation keeps going back to the things that he disagrees with his family on?
Well, Mike's circumstance is repeated in many families all across the country, where the majority of the family is one end of the ideological perspective, and a single or maybe two members are at the other end. And I think Mike's choice to just essentially try not to engage is probably what most people do. I think Mike having the opportunity to ask a question around something again, like, why is it so important to you to convince me to change from what I care about and what I value to what you value? So again, it shifts the level of the conversation off of, is it right or wrong to be conservative or liberal? Or we love each other. We're all members of a family. Why can't I have an opinion, hold an opinion different than yours? So you take the conversation, so to speak, up a level and off the argument of, is conservative or liberal better politics?
Which is not unlike the case in the following the 2016 presidential election, right? There is something bigger than left or right or Democrat or Republican.
Exactly. And in the current situation with vaccines, the question again is, it's a matter of health, not just for myself, but a matter of health for my entire family and for the community. So you take it to the discussion of, what's our responsibility to be able to really live together and to be able to really communicate with one another?
Only have about a minute left here, but Karen, I'll ask you this before we go this morning. When's it not okay to mend a fence?
Yeah, every once in a while that happens. And really the clear line there is when someone is being abusive. If someone repeatedly violates your boundaries, treats you disrespectfully, calls you names despite asking them not to do that, then you have no obligation to continue engaging with them. And as a matter of fact, you have a, you know, it is your priority to protect yourself and your health.
Dr. Karen Tamarius, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
My pleasure. Thank you.
You bet. She's the founder of Smart Politics. And Carolyn Lukensmeyer, always a pleasure to speak with you as well. Happy holidays.
Lee, thanks, and have a great Thanksgiving.
Carolyn's the founding director of the National Institute for Civil Discourse. Up next, news, then a story from Wisconsin Life about what walks in our walls. After that, we talk tips and tricks for tomorrow's turkey trot races. I'm Lee Rayburn, and it's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.